Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom. I am Josh Beiser, the owner and lead writer. Join me this week, my co-host and artist for Smugbeat Games, Kendall.
Hey there.
And our returning guest this week from Zachtronics Industries, the designer behind Space Chem and the very recently released Ironclad Tactics, Zach Barth.
Hello.
Hey, Zach. How is everything going?
Hectic, but great.
Yep, and as we just said, Ironclad Tactics just came out this week, and it's a very interesting game. Very different, I guess, in terms of design from Space Chem. So, I guess my first question is, how did the original concept behind Ironclad get started?
So, Ironclad Tactics actually started out like as a puzzle game, which is sort of hard to believe because now it's a card-based tactics game. It is not really a puzzle game at all. We wanted to build something that, we did this Flash game like many years ago called the Bureau of Steam Engineering, where you built robots by laying out like boilers and pipes and valves and gauges. And so it was like a steam simulation. It was kind of technical, kind of hard to play. But we wanted to make a sequel to that that turned it into like a proper, like, you know, proper game, like in the same way as Space Chem, basically. And we started working on it and we started building the game and we realized that, you know, like, this is cool and all, except for the fact that one thing, the game is not fun. So sort of panicked a little bit and started kind of adding and removing, you know, I mean, like a big thing with game design is being iterative. And so you throw out all the stuff that doesn't work, you sort of hone in on all the stuff that does work, and hopefully you have something fun. And we evolved this game, you know, for a couple months and just focusing on really simple design prototypes. And by the time we were done and we actually had something that we were happy with, there was no puzzle mechanics left in it whatsoever. And it was just a tactics game with cards.
Well, we should actually go back a second. For the people who have no idea what Ironclad Tactics is, could you give us like a brief summary of what exactly the game is?
Yeah, so Ironclad Tactics is a fast-paced, card-based tactics game set in alternate history Civil War with steam-powered robots. So it's like the three cool thing, you know, it's probably like 70% tactics game, 30% card game. So you're playing this game, you collect cards as you play the game. With those cards, you'll build a deck. So cards are units, which you can deploy to the battlefield, weapons that you can equip to your robots, and tactics cards, which is sort of like instants in Magic the Gathering, where you play them and they just have an instant effect. So you build a deck, and when you go into the game, you see a grid, so typically like a 9x4 grid, where you can, in a hand of 5 cards, and as cards come in, you get action points, and you can spend them to play, you know, like a unit. When you play a unit card, it puts that unit on the field. When you play a weapon on an ironclad, which are robots, it'll equip that, you know, that ironclad with that weapon. And if you play a tactics card, it'll play the tactics card, and it'll have its effect. But unlike a lot of other tactics games, this one is... So it's not real time. It is technically turn based, but each turn lasts about 5 seconds in real time. And each player, like both players, there's, you know, two sides. Each player, they're making their moves simultaneously during that, like, and in real time during that turn. But at the end of that turn, all the units will attack and move, and like if they run out of health, they'll die. So it's both turn based and real time at the same time. And yeah, with really, really fast turns that are like 5 seconds long.
Yep, and definitely a very interesting game. I know I've been reading the forums, seeing the comments, and a lot of people don't quite know what the game is. So I just wanted to get into that just to sort of help them
Absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely. It's awesome. Yeah. Go buy it.
Now, the first thing I want to talk about is the CCG aspect of the game. Mm-hmm. And as you said, that's about 30% of the design.
Yeah.
Now, it's very interesting because a few weeks ago, I was thinking to myself, I haven't played too many CCG games lately. And then last week, Car Hunter came out. This week, mm-hmm. Ironclad. So it's a pretty sweet time for me. So, my first question is, in terms of looking at the game from the CCG aspect, or the CCG design, how did you approach, like, the design or the gameplay of it?
So, we use the card mechanics as something that fuels and makes the tactics part more interesting. So, like, something you find in a lot of card games that you won't find in Ironclad Tactics are, like, in Magic, there's a lot of cards where, you know, search your library for this card. Things like that, where it's more about like being really mindful of, you know, like where your cards are coming from and how many cards you have and sort of find like hunting, you know, you've got this big deck of cards and like hunting down the specific ones you want. You're not really going to find any of those mechanics in this game. You know, our decks are 20 cards, which means that it really isn't quite the same sort of like being affected by randomness that you'd find in a game of Magic with like 60 card decks. You don't deck out. You're drawing another card every turn, every 5 seconds. So, you know, you're going to keep going through it. So your deck is almost more like a random distribution of things that you'll be supplied with and not like a deck of cards in the traditional card game sense. So that's probably one of the big differences. But otherwise, I mean, it has a lot of the stuff. Like we have some cards that, you know, like kind of being mindful of which cards are in your hand. I guess one of the other things that's important is that you can never have more than 5 cards in your hand. And that's pretty much like a usability thing, so that because a turn's so short, like if you had like 10 cards in your hand and you're trying to look through all of them, it'd be really hard to kind of gauge quickly what your choices are. But we never let you have more than 5 cards. So if your hand's full and you draw a card, it kind of shoves out the oldest card. So we have hand management, but in a way that's different from other games. Like I know, like in Scrolls, their hand management is that you have to burn cards to get points to play cards. Whereas in this, your hand management is more like, oh, you know, like the longer a card's been in your hand, like it's gonna, you know, the game's trying to push it out of your hand. But if it's when you want, you might have to sort of be mindful of like what, you know, what cards are coming in, what cards are going out, so that you can play the ones you want. So it's, I guess that's like a CCG mechanic, except for the fact that there's no other CCG that has stuff like that in it. So it's a new kind of CCG mechanic.
Now, speaking about the 20 card limit, was that mm-hmm. something that was there relatively from the beginning of the design, or was that something that had to be play tested and iteratively?
Well, we do everything play. We play test everything we do, and everything is iterative because your first idea is never ever a good one. But that has been in for a long time. That is something we figured out early because building decks with 60 cards in it, like A, that would pretty much, you know, like we don't have it all. We don't have any filler cards in this game. Like every, you know, like if every card is either a unit or a weapon for a unit, and then we have a very small number of tactics cards, just because they're also like they have such strong effects. Like you won't find a card that's like, oh, it costs 1 mana, it does 2 damage. Like it's not really like that. Everything happens on the battlefield, so the cards are much more meaningful than they are in a lot of other card games. So the combination of that with the fact that we really want players to build decks. In fact, we require players to build decks. Having to build 60 card decks all the time would be really, I think, just kind of too overwhelming. So we also don't have resource cards in our decks, which a lot of games do. Like, you have mana and magic. We don't have that.
Now, and as you just said, the cards are limited to units, tactics, and equipment. Were there any
yes.
other types of cards that were in the initial design of the game that had to be scrapped or you changed during the development process?
We changed the cards constantly. We used to have a lot more cards that were, like, we have this sort of, it's not really like an obvious mechanical thing, but each square on the battlefield can have a unit in it. So you can never have 2 units in one square. But squares can also contain, like, other kinds of things. And it's more of a technical implementation thing, really. But each square can have no more than one, we call them traps, which is not a good name for them, but that's just sort of the internal name, because we never actually tell the user that this exists as a category of mechanics. But they're things like mortars and capture points and rocks and obstacles. They're basically just, like, parts of the map. We used to have cards that would drop things that were that type on the field, like, oh, you play this tactic and it'll drop a bear trap that if a unit walks onto, he'll get stuck in place. But the problem with it is that they just didn't work right. You know, like, you just kind of litter the field with them, and it didn't really, I don't know, they didn't, I don't quite know why they didn't work, but they were not good. So we got rid of them. They also had the weird side effect that, like, if, you know, there was no, since this is kind of a mechanic that we hide, there's like, why can't I play a bear trap on a flag? It's like, oh, we wouldn't be able to show all this crap, you know? Like, if you wanted to drop, like, 3 bear traps and a landmine on something that already has a flag on it, like, you wouldn't be able to represent all of them. So we had a bunch of those, and we pretty much killed off all the cards that did that. And it's just more fun, you know. It sounds like it would be fun to be able to place traps all over the board, but it's really they're not very interactive. They don't move. They're kind of buzzkill mechanics. So where units, on the other hand, units do a lot of different things. They're full of potential. If somebody plays a unit, you don't know what they're going to do with it. So it ended up being a way more fun mechanic just to kind of focus on units and instead of like these inert objects.
Now, another part of the CCG design that I know was advertised with Ironclad is the fact that the game has no microtransactions.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, like,
microtransactions are...
Well, that's a good way for our next topic. So, obviously, from what you just said, you're not a huge fan of microtransactions.
Not at all.
Oh, go right.
Sorry.
Oh, no, you
no,
can
no. You ask your question, and then instead of just me rambling, I can answer your question.
Okay. So I assume then that when you originally came up with Ironclad, there was never a point during development that you said, well, maybe there would be microtransactions. It was always just a solid no from the start?
I try not to ever make any kind of decision like that.
Okay.
To say, like, we're never going to change our mind. But even if that's true, like, it was really never something that we wanted to do. The big, honestly, that we've been working on this game for 2 years. Like, 2 years ago, microtransactions were not as big of a thing as they are now. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of like a, you know, historical aspect of development. One thing that we did kind of decide early on that we wanted to try out the game is make it so it was possible to create more content in the form of DLC.
Okay.
So with Space Camp, we kind of shot ourselves in the foot. You know, we didn't really, like, we made a game that didn't really support DLC. Like, we made one DLC pack, but then we kind of gave it away. And, like, there's sort of this thing with when you're making games that you're going to have people who are, like, they kind of like your game. Maybe they buy it, like, in the Humble Bundle for 50 cents or whatever. But you're going to have people who love your game, and they want more. You know? And, like, the two options that you have for something like this is, like, well, you could make a game that takes 40 hours to play and charge $60 for it, or you could make a game that's, like, a small, like, good size, you know, costs $15, takes 10 hours to play, and then for the people who really love the game, we keep releasing, like, new campaigns and expansion packs and that kind of stuff. So that was something early on we decided, you know, it's like, hey, we'd like to make a game that we could expand for the players who really like it. So that's, like, with Space Camp, we had a bunch of players who really loved it, but we really couldn't think of anything else to give them. So it didn't really, we kind of shot ourselves in the foot there, you know? So with this, that was one of our early things. We said we want to be able to expand this game. But yeah, like, so as we were developing it, though, microtransactions started becoming more and more of a thing. And, you know, we asked ourselves, like, is this something we should be doing? Should we be selling card packs? But, like, A, it didn't really make sense, and B, I think they're terrible. From, like, it's like, you know, so I'm in the games industry, obviously. I spend most of my time talking not to gamers about games, but talking to game developers. And a lot of gamers, I think, really are kind of like, you know, they either ambivalent to microtransactions or they think they're terrible. I don't think anybody's really enthusiastic about them from a player standpoint. But if you look at game developers, oh my God, like, 2 years ago, it used to be that you could actually have a conversation with other game developers and be like, I think microtransactions are terrible. And they'd be like, me too. But for, like, somehow in the past 2 years, like, it's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something, like, it's totally flipped around that most people are like, oh yeah, I think as long as you do it well, like, you know, like there's good ways to do it and there's bad ways to do it, and like League of Legends, they do it the good way, but like there's nobody saying like even the good way is terrible. and that's really, I sort of, at first I was really opinionated, and then I was like, whatever, but I've actually swung back to being really opinionated about it, because like, I you know, I grew up with video games. Like, once you got the game, like, you, the entire world was yours, you know, and they still did it, like Skyrim and stuff, like you get the game and like you get like this whole world and experience that's yours to own and master. And I think that's really aspirational, that, yeah, like, if you can, you know, like, once you're in, like, it's up to you, like, how far you wanted to go and how well you wanted to do and, like, you know, being able to express yourself. And now, like, it's all the games. It's like, oh, you know, like, you can get the game and it's free, but if you want to have any sort of self-expression or any sort of mastery, you're going to have to pay up. And so while you're playing the game, you're thinking, like, well, how much real money do I want to spend to be able to express myself? And, like, you know, that's a lot like real life, and real life kind of sucks. And I think it's weird that, like, people, you know, we have this amazing tool for creativity called video games, and people are like, the first thing they want to do is like, let's recreate like the harsh, you know, like monetary realities of real life in game, you know. So it's like anti-escapist, and I don't understand why everybody embraces that so much, other than the fact that it makes tons of money.
Yeah,
because people are definitely like, they don't realize that they're willing to spend more money that way, but they are, and game developers realize this, and that's why everybody's like, this is the way to do it, you know. So, and I mean, like, obviously if you're doing multiplayer games now, like League of Legends or whatever, like it kind of has to be free to play, because you need a huge audience, you know, for it to run a, like a massively multiplayer game. And that's why so many, you know, historically, even before microtransactions became a thing, like an MMO, like, unless it was WoW, would last like a year. You know, there's so many MMOs that were actually pretty cool that just got shut down because you have like really hardcore, you know, that you have these ongoing repeating server costs. You need to have players. And I think it's cool that with free-to-play and stuff that you can actually, like, anybody can make an MMO and keep it running, you know, because it just works better. But we don't make multiplayer games, so the last thing I would ever want to do is try to, you know, we don't need to do that, so I don't want to.
Now, I think
that was sufficiently ranty enough, right?
Yeah, that was good.
Get my tinfoil hat, you know?
Now, what you just said regarding how much people are actually spending in these free-to-play games, I think that's a really good point. Because traditionally, as we see, a retail game is $50, $60. You can get, you know, maybe at standard, I think it's like 8 to 10 hours. But then we got the big games like Grand Theft Auto, Skyrim. Those games can go on and on and on. But when you look at, like, free-to-play games like that, and as you said, yes, it's free. You can sign up, you can download, and it costs you $0. But when you actually look at the actual cost to playing that game, it can be, like, 80, 90, even into the hundreds of dollars. And we see this
in
a lot of, like, the very monetized games. Stuff like the Farmvilles, what they were just talking about with Plants vs. Zombies 2, that I was watching, like, a quick look on that, and that was just very exploitive in terms of what they're doing in terms of monetization.
Really, all of, I mean, like, even the more core free to play games, like World of Tanks, like they sell like really expensive tanks that are just good, you know, or like Battlefield, free to play, like whatever the free to play Battlefield game was, I forget what it's called, but like the World War II one,
yeah,
the cartoony one, right?
Yeah, the cartoony Frida one. Like they made that game, and they were doing kind of poorly, and they were only selling cosmetic items. And then, like, as sort of their last-ditch effort, they're like, let's make items that are just better, but you pay for them. And they added that, and a bunch of people complained, and then the same people went and bought all the items, and then their revenue quadrupled.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, it's, yeah. It works. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so, it works, but I think it's, like, I think it's more of a moral thing, you know? Like, what are we...
Like, you're selling your soul, deal.
Kind of, not even just selling your... I mean, like, we're all sellouts, right? Like, yeah. I run a game studio. Like, there was some selling out involved. Mm-hmm. It's not just selling out, but just, like, what, you know, like, as an artist, as somebody who creates something, you know, like, what kind of values are, like, what kind of values are you embracing and using, you know, like, I don't know. aspirations. I think it's really about aspirations. I feel like games like that have very low aspirations. They don't aspire to do much other than make money.
Yeah. And another thing you just talked about with MMOs and how a lot of really good MMOs kind of died out, the free-to-play market really has, I guess, given MMOs a big shot in the arm. We saw this with Lord of the Rings Online, for instance. I remember they were crapping out. They were going to go out. They switched to free-to-play, and now they're bigger than ever. Same for Star Trek, DC Universe. But then
I don't think it's so much that it gave them a shot in the arm, but it gave them a viable business model, unlike subscriptions. That was, that always, I mean, I growing up with MMOs when they're in, like, the subscription period, like, that was pretty harsh in its own way.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you gotta pony up $15 a month, regardless of how much you play, and regardless what you do. Like, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And you had to buy the game.
Of course, yeah.
Like, that's just a lot, that was a lot of money, you know, like, as a kid, you know.
Yeah, man, I'm the same way with that. I hated subscriptions back then. Mm-hmm. I've only played, maybe 2 or 3 MMOs actually had subscriptions. I know my last official one was World of Warcraft, which I only played for like a few months. And then after that, I was like, I'm done. I just don't see the value in spending money per month, especially now when we've got so many games coming out that you really don't have that time to spend to one game anymore.
Yeah, I'm just glad I don't make multiplayer games. Because you'd have to, you know, like, it's, you know, like, as much as I might, like, trash this stuff for not being aspirational, like, the realities of it is I think you'd have a really hard time nowadays making a multiplayer game without making it like this. So fortunately, we just don't.
Now, one example I think we talked about on an earlier podcast that I think Ken and I both like in terms of free-to-play would be Card Hunt, which just went live about a week ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's an example of it done right. It's one of those games that, as we said, there's no money needed to be spent to get an advantage to, you know, that's going to be required of you. You can unlock everything just by playing it. All the majority of the monetization is on, like, the personalization aspect. So, new costumes.
Yeah, that's like the League of Legends, like the good free-to-play. There's some air quotes in there.
Yeah.
Oh,
no, go ahead.
Oh, it's definitely a viable business model.
But I think, as you said, it's definitely one of the things that's like a push and pull between, you know, how much are you willing to, I guess, quote-unquote, exploit your audience to do it in the process. But I think Card Hunter strikes a really good balance, and it's going to be interesting to see how they take it further, because, as we've said, so many free-to-play games go with that exploitive concept that it really has soured a lot of people on the genre as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I don't know. Well, there's a reason the game has no microtransactions in it. Ironclad Tactics is just because we want nothing to do with it.
Now, returning back to Ironclad, another aspect of the CCG design I thought was interesting was the concept of upgrading cards.
Yeah.
And for those who haven't played it, what happens is that a lot of your cards have basically a condition, like the cavalry sword, if you hit 30 enemies with it, or if you get one of your ironclads to cross over and score victory points, you unlock a upgrade version of that card. Could you talk a little bit about where did that design come from?
Yeah, I mean, this came from the same source that a lot of stuff came from in the game, which is sort of the same place as, like, the anti-microtransaction standpoint, which is that we want to reward players for playing the game by giving them more cards. So, like, it creates this feedback loop of awesomeness where, you know, you play the game, you get some cards. You use those cards, you get more cards, you know, and just, like, we you know, every chance we get, we give you more cards. So, like, right now in Ironclad Tactics, you get cards for upgrading cards, you get cards for beating missions, you get cards for beating challenges, you get cards for beating puzzles, you get cards for playing special game modes with your friends, you get cards for playing random skirmishes against random people on the internet and winning. Like, everything in the game gives you cards. And because we're not trying to nickel and dime you and sell them to you, we can totally just give them to you and make it really fun. You know? We actually, so the game, so one of the things that people have noticed about Iron Hunt Tactics is that on Steam, it's only on Steam, and on Steam it has one achievement. Just one. And it's a weird one. And it's a special one. So, and it has nothing to do with playing the game. So, you know, there's this one achievement in it, and there was somebody on the Steam Community Hub who was like, oh, like, the only reason I buy games is for the achievements. I don't have time to play them unless I get achievements. I'm not buying this piece of shit, you know, or whatever. And it's ridiculous. So we actually had a bunch of achievements in the game that were for stuff like Trample 5 Infantry, or, you know, like, get your hat knocked off 5 times as a Zouave, or whatever. But we removed all of them because we already have achievements in the game, and they're called card challenges, and when you complete them, instead of it giving you some stupid little icon that goes in your Steam profile, it gives you cards, which you can play with and do stuff with and love. You know? So, yeah, like, the entire game is just infused with that philosophy of that, you know, like, we love the people who are playing this game, we want to give them as many prizes as we can for playing the game and being awesome at it and trying new things, and yeah.
Yep. Now, speaking about that whole feedback loop of awesomeness, one thing that I really do love about just the general deck building of the game is just how much your deck can change as you get these new cards. Because as you said,
yes,
there's only 20 cards, so it's not like you can go completely crazy. And one thing that I'm quickly finding out is that when you're trying to decide which cards you have multiples of, that's a huge deal. Because as you said, with only 5 cards possible at one time, 20 in your pool, the first thing that I did was I had 4 movement tactics cards in my deck, and I quickly realized that having those 4 cards meant that there was a chance I could only have 4 of those cards in my hand one time, and then I'm pretty much screwed for like 3 or 4 turns while I hope to get something that I can use. And it's very interesting how the game goes on, that you're just constantly refining your deck and altering it, either with new cards you unlock through the story or just the upgrade versions. So, like,
and that is not an accident. Yeah. So a lot of card games, you can kind of just build one deck and just coast the whole game with it. And especially free-to-play games, right, where you have to be able to win if you don't buy anything, you know? It's like, oh yeah, you can get like a small set of cards and you can win with those small set of cards, but if you want anything special, you have to buy it separately. Well, because we're giving you all the cards, what we do is we made a bunch of levels where they have vastly different challenges, so you have to change your deck. You have to think about what cards you're using, and you have to play that metagame and sort of like design a deck strategy that works against specific difficult challenges. And I think a lot of people aren't used to this because they're just used to kind of being able to just like next, and just blast their game without thinking. But this is not just any other game. Like, this is a Zachtronics game. You know, you're going to have to think a little bit and, you know, be conscious of like, what are you doing? What are you able to do? How can you overcome these challenges? And like, in some ways, we sort of accidentally loop back around to making a puzzle game. In that you have a challenge, you have tools to overcome a challenge, you just have to figure out how to use them. And the deck building is a big part of it. Exactly what you said, like constantly changing your deck, constantly creating new decks, that is all deliberate, and that is the point of the game. And it's not obvious that's the point of the game, that's secretly the point of the game.
As you said, it is similar to a puzzle game. I love how it does have that hidden nuance, just like as we talked about last time with Space. So from the outside, Space Camp just looks like a game that teaches chemistry. But, of course, there is a hell of a lot more than that to do in that game.
Yeah, definitely. This one doesn't look like it teaches chemistry, fortunately. But yeah, exactly. It's nuanced. We try to make games that are good and interesting like that.
Now, another part of Ironclad, I know you said that you weren't going out to make a multiplayer game, but Ironclad does have multiplayer components. So you said that there are random matches you can play with your friends. Now, one part that looks interesting is the co-op. Could you talk a little bit about what the co-op mode of the game is
Absolutely.
Like?
I think my favorite multiplayer mode games, co-op, is fun to play stuff with somebody else. And it's fun when you're on the same side because you don't have to worry about losing to them. So one of the things we figured out really early on is that, you know, we're going to have a really strong single-player experience, but we want it to also be completely accessible in co-op mode. And so we added that. And the way co-op works is it's sort of like a two-headed giant thing, like in Magic the Gathering. You each have your own resources, you each have your own cards, but you're playing your units in the same, you know, from the same side of the field, and they're mingling together, and like you can play, you can equip a weapon on your friend's card and then maneuver it out of danger. You know, it sort of works like that. And it's pretty simple, actually. You're just sort of like the same person. It's like, have you seen like Pacific Rim?
Yeah.
It's like Jaeger pilot mode, where you just sort of like, you just kind of join together and you can, you know, you're connected with the brain playing Ironclad Tactics.
Now, another part of the game, another mode, as you talk about, there's skirmish mode. There's also puzzle mode. Mm-hmm. Now, puzzle mode, from what I've seen, it is, as the name implies, a puzzle that you have to use a specific deck to accomplish a specific challenge. Was that sort of how Ironclad first started out, or like
not even remotely?
Oh, okay.
This is just sort of the looping back around part, where, you know, we look at games like Duels of the Planeswalkers, they have little card puzzles, except theirs are really complicated and kind of terrible. the cool thing about puzzles in a game like this is that, A, it provides, like, a challenge that, you know, like a more, like, puzzle thinking man's challenge. But the B, it provides, it's sort of like a secondary tutorial. So after you think you're out of the tutorials, that you're going to have these puzzle levels that just happen to feature the more complicated, nuanced cards of the game and kind of put you in a scenario where you can use them and learn something about them. And you also get a bunch of the cards. Like, you get both the intangible takeaway of learning how to use those cards effectively and the physical takeaway of having three more of that card. So I think there's five puzzles in the game, and they all are based around that concept of, you know, here's something that you can kind of take your time with and kind of take a break from, you know, like the tactics-y nature to think, you know, to have like a little puzzle mode, but it also teaches you about some new cards.
Now, I have two just random questions about the gameplay I just want to ask you. These are just for my own curiosity. The first one is, I was looking at the cards, and one of the infantry had it said it had armor. I just wasn't sure, what does armor do for infantry?
So if you're in the deck editor list, you can, like the deck editor, you can hover over a question mark.
Okay.
And it's not the most findable thing, but this will show you, like, complete detailed explanations of all the mechanics in the game and explain it all. So armor, and this will right explain armor. We have a couple other ways that we sort of subtly try to explain armor, but this is one of the things that's more challenging in the game, is how to explain, like, non-obvious mechanics. But fortunately, there's only one of them, and it's called armor. When a unit is armored, it does not take damage from one damage attack. But it takes full damage from everything else.
Okay.
So one of the things you'll notice, like, the damage in Ironclad Tactics is very discreet. Like, there's no, like, oh, this does 17.5 plus or minus 2 damage. Like, everything does 1, 2, or 3 damage. And all of the 1 damage weapons are bullet weapons. And all of the 2 damage weapons are swords and flamethrowers. And all of the 3 damage weapons are things that, like, explode, and some swords and, you know, like a drill, like melee weapons are usually, like, 2 or 3. But what this means is that, so when things are armored, it's pretty much that they're immune against bullet weapons, like, unless they're, like, overcharged. And that's why it actually, like, the armor thing is usually, like, a bullet deflecting. So it's, like, sort of like a blending of, like, qualitative and quantitative mechanics in the game.
And now, so speaking about bounds, the armor infantry, like, obviously they're going to be great against other infantry units, or at least other one-point infantry, but the other interesting part of the design is the fact that ironclads run over infantry. So it's always fun that when you see, like, two or three infantry guys coming down line, you just put one ironclad down, it'll just smoosh them all.
Yep, if you can get them through quick enough, yeah, totally.
Now, the other question I have is there a way to fast forward or speed up a turn, or is every turn basically the same length of time?
We actually dynamically adjust the length of the turns based on sort of what's going on in the game. So you shouldn't once you get out of the tutorials, you shouldn't find yourself in any situations where you're just, like, waiting for the turn to end. But otherwise, it's not a thing. Simply because there's so many multiplayer, like, we'd never be able to do that in multiplayer, so we don't really want players to build up the habit of, like, oh, I just gotta get through this. Like, most of the time there should be enough going on that you're right on the edge of feeling like you just had enough time for the turn. It's in single player, it's 5.5 seconds per turn, because 5 seconds was too short and 6 seconds was too long. So it's like, this is something that we play tested and tuned, and yeah. Sometimes it gets a little slow when there's a whole bunch of attackers, but that's just because there's so much going on that you kind of need to be able to see it all.
Now, moving on, another aspect of Ironclad Tactics I really like is the aesthetic value of the game. There's a really strong aesthetic. You have the comic book style cutscenes. And another thing that I really love is how a lot of cards have, like, the little unit descriptions, like, or like the lore text that you
flavor
see.
Flavor text.
There
yeah.
you go. With the art style, how did that come about? Was that something that was developed over the course, or did you sort of have that idea from the beginning?
Oh, I mean, that's just purely a product of our art team. I don't know exactly, I'd have to ask them how to describe it perfectly, but, you know, we wanted to make something that, you know, definitely, like, embraced, like, the Americana aspect, and we wanted to make something that looked good, and we wanted to make something that would have reasonable production time, you know, so we want, like, the cel-shaded units, so they're all, like, rigged in 2D, and, like, that makes them pretty easy to make, the backgrounds, so everything's painted, you know, we wanted everything to look kind of painterly, so.
Okay. Now, one thing that we were talking about before the cast is the soundtrack. Ken was talking about how much he enjoyed the soundtrack from Space Chem. And with Ironclad, you said that you actually expanded on it. You said there was, like, 70 minutes of soundtrack this time.
Yeah. So we have this guy. So he lives in France, and I've never met him before. And his name is Evan Linney, and he did all of the music for Space Camp, which comes out to about 20 minutes worth of music. And one of the things we really got on that game was a lot of people saying, like, "Oh my God, the soundtrack is incredible. The game is okay, but the soundtrack, incredible." And so we actually approached him again for Enclave Tactics. We said, obviously your music is great. Would you like to make a soundtrack for our next game? But instead of 20 minutes, can we make it 70 minutes? And so we did. And yeah,
it's really
great music.
Now
I don't know how else to talk about it because it's music. You just have to listen to it.
Now, I saw on the Steam page that it's available in the deluxe edition of Ironclad. Will it be available to be purchased individually?
No, it's actually okay. So one of the sort of weird things about this, we can be candid, is that it's pretty easy to extract game resources from a game. So the soundtrack is available in the game, obviously, because you hear it in there, right? So and it's also the only buying it as a soundtrack is not the only place to get it. So it is included, obviously we include it in our bundle. You can buy it officially through that, but we're not planning to sell it separately just because it seems kind of silly.
Yeah, I know when Hotline...
Well, I know a lot of games do that.
Mm-hmm. I know with Hotline Miami, they were charging, I think, $10 for their soundtrack, and then people just found out you could just rip it, very easily.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing we are is that if you do get the deluxe edition, you do get the soundtrack, we're gonna have the lossless FAC files. We're gonna have, we're gonna save it in MP3 format just so it saves you the time. But yeah, I mean it's kinda hard to prevent people from doing that.
Yeah. Nature of the beast in some sense, I guess.
Yep. There's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's like the game could be pirated by anyone,
Yeah.
Eventually, you just kind of count on people. Buying it's not just about having physical access to the files. It's about, knowing that showing your support and making stuff like this happen.
All right. So let's move on. I got a few more questions, and then we can begin wrapping it up. Now, I know, obviously, the game was play-tested. You had the beta during the summer, and I know a lot of people were testing out the multiplayer aspect of the game. So my question is, how different, I guess, do you see people, I guess, in terms of tactics or general play when they're playing against other players as opposed to going against the AI in the single-player story?
I actually have no idea. We did not spend most of our time testing that. The all of our playtesting, in the summer beta, was really focused on the single-player experience.
Okay.
Because that's the thing that we control, and we really, we control how that happens. We had a really hard time getting the difficulty in the right spot for the game. You don't want it to be that it's so easy you just blast through without being challenged, but then again, we don't want you to have to play, one of the missions 46 times, which is literally the average amount of times you had to play to beat it. So, yeah, we toned that one down a little bit. You're not there yet, but you'll know it when you see it. it's still kind of hard. But so that was where we directed all of our playtesting efforts. Our overall card balancing strategy was just to make cards that are balanced. A lot of games that are single player have a really extreme power curve where stuff from the beginning of the game is completely useless at the end. But we have only a very small power curve increase at the beginning where the first cards we give you are a little useless. But even then, they're so cheap that they're actually kind of useful later in the game.
Yeah.
The prototype. The first unit we give you is terrible, but it's actually so cheap that it's not a bad unit, especially on some levels where you need something that can just soak up some damage. We actually, when we playtested the game very early on, we didn't have any story mode. It was merely, it was only competitive, 1v1 against another human.
Okay.
So all the original balancing of the game and figuring out, what's the right cost for the different cards, why does the default infantry cost 3 action points? That was all stuff that we figured out early on with player versus player playtesting.
Now, in regards to the future of Ironclad, I know you talked about DLC. In terms of what's going to be coming down the line, do you see you and Sectronics developing it more in terms of single-player content, or do you see more expanding in terms of multiplayer?
Both separately.
Okay.
So one thing we definitely want to do are release DLC packs that we call them add-on campaigns because it doesn't sound as bad. But basically what they're going to do is it's going to consist of a miniaturized campaign. So smaller than the 20-level main campaign. It's going to be a smaller campaign with its own story, its own universe, spun off of the Ironclad's universe, and cards and missions that you unlock by playing that campaign. So I think one of the areas that we're going to focus on is that, at the there are other, I don't want to spoil the story, but these steam-powered robots aren't going anywhere. they're going to affect other things in the world. So, you know, sort of like spinning off other stories that are, you know, have their own characters and connect up with the main story in interesting ways, exploring some of the, like, the hidden stuff. That's one of the things we fleshed out with, like, a short story. And then one of the missions, you run into this group of Union soldiers. We actually have a story online that sort of explores their backstory and, like, how they got to where they are when you meet them in the story. We want to keep building up stuff like that to build up the universe and build connections wherever we can. And then adding in, like, cool new factions and cool new parts and cool new mechanics to go with it. At the same time, we want to start doing some stuff that, like, explores, like, new kinds of ways to play the multiplayer. We're all, like on the development team, like, way more, like, single-player, cooperative, casual gamers in that way, as opposed to, like, hardcore professional StarCraft players. So we honestly weren't sure exactly what people would want, like, what the hardcore competitive people would want. But we've got a lot of stuff that we're going to get feedback from people, see what people want, do some polls, talk to the people who are playing the game, and build some new multiplayer modes that are, like, the kind of stuff that people really want. One of the things that I like the idea of, I don't know if it's going to be good or if we're going to do it, but having, like, draft tournaments where, so you go into this tournament, it pairs you up with, like, 7 other people, and it takes away all your cards, and then gives you, like, booster packs. And you tear them open, you pass them around, and you have to build a deck sort of, like, in a, you know, like, the metagame of a draft environment, and then you play around, like, against, you know, you play, like, a quick elimination bracket, and with the decks that you built. So it's this thing that you'd play over, you know, like, a round of Ironclad Tactics takes 10 to 15 minutes, but we can turn this into, like, sort of an hour-long event where you're building a deck on the fly, maybe with cards that are only available to play with in this mode, and you get to compete off, like, in a quick little bracket against a couple other people.
That actually sounds pretty cool. I could definitely see Ironclad, at least just from what I've been playing, I could see develop more as, like, this, you guys, like, CCG community or CCG tournament base. Do you see yourself ever adding in, I know, like, another aspect behind a lot of popular CCG games is, you know, rare cards, foil cards, stuff like that. Do you see any of that kind of, like, super rare card type design in Ironclad, or do you think it just wouldn't support it?
Maybe. I don't know. We the current way it works is that everybody can unlock the same cards because there's no surprises, there's no random rarity, there's no booster packs, there's no microtransactions. So I don't know how that would fit in exactly. Like, you know, like, what are the odds? You know, like, in real life, you can keep buying booster packs until you get a foil card, you know? But in this, I don't know. Would that require trading? Does that require more security? Yeah. We've tried to avoid features that were like a ladder. The reason we don't have a ladder is because that means your game has to be rock solid and because people are going to cheat. But if you remove the reasons for people to cheat, you know, you don't have to worry about it as much.
Yeah.
So sort of being like security mindful, you know, not opening up like surfaces for being hit.
Now, in terms of the new cards that you're going to add with the DLC packs, will those cards be usable in the story and like the single player game?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Okay. Yeah, I can't see why they wouldn't be. There's obviously some questions like around that, like if you have two people who want to play together, you know, what happens if only one of them owns the DLC? Whether or not everybody has to own it. There's also questions of if we have this new campaign, do we want to let you play through with all your old cards, or do we want to kind of require you to try the new cards? We've got some ideas for that. You have to see. I'm not sure. The answer is I have no idea. We're in purely reactionary mode right now, trying to get all the fires put out.
Now, one aspect behind the campaign is the fact that you're unlocking new cards, and then you can always go back and replay either the story challenges or the skirmish mode. In terms of how you set up the balance or the progression of the levels, is it generally possible for someone to just sit in one level and collect all the cards, or are they supposed to like go through the campaign and then sort of double back around and start doing the challenges?
Oh, so you're asking whether you need to go back to get the challenges, or whether you can just get all the challenges right as you're beating the levels?
Yeah, like in terms of like the general progression of like how the cards are handed out and stuff like that.
Depends on how good you are. Some of the challenges are actually really tricky, and I can definitely see it being that the cards you unlock later might not, you know, they don't necessarily have a higher power curve, but they might be like, you know, side grade effective in a way that makes it easy to do one of the challenges. You know, like there's a card, one of my favorite cards actually is the wood chipper. It is a weapon that does no damage, and it sprays sawdust at your opponents, but it slows them down.
Nice.
So there's some units where sort of being able to like, you know, crowd control by slowing down your opponents is really useful. But you don't get that card until like the end of the game.
Okay.
So I could totally see it being, what I, if, We have all the metrics set up, so I could tell you, but I don't actually know off the top of my head right now, but what I would suspect is that, and what it looked like from playtesting early on, is that most people complete some challenges as they go through, but most people just sort of blast through the story and try to just get to, like, story completion, and then if they're still interested in the game, and if they're, depending on what kind of player they are, they'll go back then and try to, like, knock off the challenges.
Alright, so I think my last general question then is, for the DLC, do you have a time frame for when it will start showing up?
I have no idea. Soon. I think it's between one and three months after release is like the best window to release DLC.
Okay.
Because that's when people are, you know, people have discovered the game, so they're hungry for more, but it's not like it was a year later and they've forgotten what the game is. So probably like 1 to 3 months. Not really sure. We're going to have at least 2 DLC packs because we've already, you know, like one of our bundles already contains them. So people were trusted us enough to buy them sight unseen. But, you know, we're definitely going to roll out at least 2, you know, like high quality content filled DLC packs. And I have no idea what we're going to do after that.
And so I guess at this point, do you have any idea what's next for Zachtronics, or is that still way up in the air at this point?
I don't know. Stuff.
Yay.
We're looking to do a lot more with Ironclad Tactics before we really get into anything else. You know, we have to release these 2 DLC packs. We're looking to port it to some platforms. You know, there's a lot of stuff to consider: Xbox, PlayStation, Vita, tablets. I really don't know where it's going to go, but it's going to go. We're going to hopefully take it somewhere other than PC.
Okay.
So, oh, we're also adding controller support. That's one of the things. We do not have controller support right now, but with all, like, the Steam Big Screen or whatever it's called, and, you know, there's a lot of people are playing games with controllers now, so we're going to try to add controller support to Ironclads and sort of use it as a stepping stone to potentially being on consoles.
Okay.
Turns out it's kind of hard to port games.
Just one last question that I remember about the gameplay. Mm-hmm. Now, Ironclad does have, you have different factions or different sides. Now, I
Absolutely.
Started to see a little bit of that where I'm at in the campaign, but could you go into a little bit more detail about that from a design perspective?
Yeah. So there's a bunch of different factions of cards. Like, each card has a faction, and there's, like, 6 factions in the base set, and you can only have cards from 2 factions in a deck. So it's sort of just like, it's sort of an arbitrary constraint, but each faction has different personalities. This sort of requires you to kind of hone in on like a pair of factions that sort of set the tone for how your deck behaves. You know, there's the army faction, which is really well-rounded. You've got the mercenaries that are like, a lot of their cards are like wacky side grids where, you know, they do way more damage but have to reload, or they've got like really strange ranges on them. And, you know, so all these factions have different feels to them. And it just sort of makes deck building more interesting. You know, it's my big but really vague and confusing sort of philosophy of how to design game stuff is sort of, you know, if you imagine like a climbing wall or a ball or something, just trying to put as many bumps and like nubbly like hand grab spots as you can on it. So like if somebody's interfacing with your product, you know, there's a really good chance that like everybody's going to find something they love about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like the story is a graphic novel that's really character driven, but we've got like this compelling, you know, card based tactics, fast pacedness to it. But we've also got deck building, and within that we've got, you know, we've got factions, we've got, you know, card challenges. So all these little just interesting things that, you know, like a sticking point for somebody to get stuck on and be like, hey, you know what? I love this game.
Cool. All right. I think that does for me for my questions. Ken, do you have any questions you would like to ask Zach?
Yeah. So as a card-based game, do you have card for Steam for your game?
We do. We do have Steam trading cards. We have 12. It's a huge set.
So how did we... You approached a couple months beforehand before asking for it to be created, or did you already have that in mind?
Everybody's doing it. Seemed like the right thing to do.
I actually got a little addicted to it, actually, because updating your profile allows you to add more things to your profile. I don't know why I want to do it, but just that compulsion's there.
Excellent. Yeah.
So,
yeah, we actually get a cut of all the money from that.
Nice.
The card sales. So yeah, I'm like, yeah, we'll make some cards, sure.
Yeah, so you're one of the lucky ones, because there's a lot of developers that we've talked to through the cast that just said, cards, eh. Oh no, we need any cards, Jesus. And it's always like too late.
Yeah, so, well, yeah. I mean, we just happened to launch at the right time, I think. Like, we wouldn't go back and do it for Space Chem, but it's something that's available to every game on Steam now, and a lot of people are doing it, definitely. Well, they're fun, too. There's the amount of art required for it is ridiculous. If you want to do a card set, you need, like, 5 to 15 cards, you need 5 backgrounds, 5 emoticons, it's a lot of art assets to build. Oh, and 5, 6 badges, too. So, that's, like, 30 different art assets, that's a lot.
but
also, each card needs a small image and a big image. Like it's, I don't know if you guys have seen the Ironclad's cards, but they're all the different characters. Yeah. So when you click them to expand them, it's a character bio.
Yeah, I was looking at that earlier, and they do look pretty cool. So as you said, there's a lot of work that goes into them. But as we're seeing a lot with, you know, Steam trading, the community, the marketplace, it is becoming like a very good like side business almost to make some extra money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually know people that buy, you know, extra copies of games or obscure games or just random indie games just so they can give the cards to their friends or have the friends give the cards to them. So it's pretty interesting the culture
I'm
that's being surrounded by it. So I'm sure people.
It's a very clever sales tactic.
Ken, do you have anything else?
No, that was it.
All right. So in that case, I guess the last thing for me to ask you, Zag, is do you have any closing or final thoughts you would like to say about Ironclad?
I should go buy it. Pretty easy. It's good. We've heard good things about it.
Well, it looks great. Great presentation. Art style is really good. I really love the cover art, too. Makes a good impression when I first opened up Steam. It's like, Ironclad's here. Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah. It's fun because I played a bunch of games, but this is the first game where, you know, the graphics are going to be in the pros column of the review and not the con. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, I've been playing it from yesterday to today, and I'm really enjoying it. As you said, there's the card building aspect is really well done, I think, and there is that great loop of just all the decisions that go into making a deck. And I've even gotten to unlocking all the other sides. Yeah, I'm still, I guess I'm like 8 or 9 missions in. I forget exactly where I am in the story, but I'm definitely seeing a lot of like the synergies you can start putting together in terms of cards and the side grades and stuff like that.
Yeah, got a lot more to go.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And yeah, and I can't wait to see what you do with the DLC packs, and hopefully you'll be able to, there'll be enough buzz around the game that you can start expanding on a lot more and get some of like those more CCG or more multiplayer aspects in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to add some of those.
All right. So in that case, I think we are going to wrap it up here. Zach, it was great to have you back on.
Yeah, it was great. Great participating, as always.
Yeah. And hopefully we can talk to you again in a few months about whatever else is going on with Zachtronics.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And Ken, thanks for being my co-host this week.
No problem.
So with that said, we're going to end things here for the Perceptive Podcast. As always, if you're interested in either contributing a piece for the site or for being a guest on a future cast, you can send us an email from the Submissions Wanted link on the front page. That will take you to where you'll see our guidelines and the link to email. So with that said, thanks for tuning in this week, and we will talk to you again next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Good night.